A fateful day.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office.
In August of 1974, Richard Nixon, facing impeachment, resigned. The new movie Watchmen imagines what would have happened if he'd stayed around for a few more terms. Nixon, Frost, Watchmen, is Nixon back? Hey, what if he never left? On the road of history, stick a fork in it. We're done on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Friday, March 6th. I'm John Hockenberry. We're serious about those historical forks in the road. What if Nixon never left? How would things be different? Gore 2000. If the Beatles had stayed together, pick your own fork. You know how to reach us. Farai?
That's a good question. I'm Farai Chidea in for Adora Udoji, who's spending time with her new baby. Coming up this hour, the situation in Sudan is constantly changing. We'll put it in context and explain what it all means for the Darfur problem. Plus, we'll look at the recent shift at late-night television and see what's worth staying up for. Those stories and more ahead, but first, these headlines.
We'll also find out who's staying up. It's actually changing. Two digits separated by a decimal point are the ones to watch later this morning. The latest unemployment rate comes out in a couple of hours. Economists predict it will be much worse than the previous month. The consensus is about 650,000 jobs disappearing in February. We'll see what Wall Street thinks about the numbers later in the morning. For now, world markets are having a tough day already. All major Asian markets have dropped, with Japan's Nikkei striking 3.5% lower. The picture's only a bit brighter in Europe right now. Markets there have been relatively flat.
And a bill to help troubled homeowners is one step closer to reality. The House passed a measure to give some troubled borrowers facing foreclosure access to lower interest rates. Massachusetts Democrat Barney Frank says fixing housing is crucial to the larger economy.
Until we do a great deal to reduce this, you will not get an end to the current crisis.
The bill must now make it through the Senate, where it could change. Staying in Washington, two more would-be Obama administration officials are dropping out of consideration. CNN medical correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta says no thanks to the Surgeon General job. The neurosurgeon cites concern for his young children.
Had nothing to do with taxes, right?
Oh, well, you know, he's a handsome man and he's got a fan. And
yeah, there we go. Who wants that? Who wants all of that headache? Over in the Treasury Department, Secretary Tim Geithner's choice to be his chief deputy is also pulling out Ann Nazareth as a former SEC official. Her move is reportedly also a personal decision to keep her current job as a law partner. So markets are reacting to the unemployment number, anticipating the unemployment number. Dow and S&P both sunk yesterday. The S&P starts trading at 682. So, once again, we're not going to talk any more about the Watchmen movie, but we are envisioning a world where Nixon never left office. It's a subplot of Watchmen. We want to hear your ideas about what might be today had he never left. Say, for example, Ford would never have taken office, which means the Beatles might still be together, which means Milli Vanilli would never have happened. But you can do way, way better than that. Tell us what would have changed if Nixon never left, or what forks in the road would you love to go back to change the course of history? Gore 2000? Bush second term, 8778-MY-TAKE or MyTake at thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org, and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
I'm Farai Chidea.
And I'm John Hockenberry. Good morning, everyone. We begin in Sudan. Actually, we begin with something that happened yesterday in the International Criminal Court in The Hague. It issued a warrant for the arrest of the Sudanese president, Omar al-Bashir, for alleged war crimes in the Darfur region. And the nation of Sudan was quick to respond.
Allahu Akbar!
Allahu Akbar!
Allahu Akbar!
Allahu Akbar!
President Bashir addressed huge crowds in Khartoum, crowds in patriotic and religious chants supporting him. It's not clear what everyone in Sudan believes, but it is clear that international aid agencies are going to be expelled. 13 aid agencies have been kicked out of the Darfur region in Sudan this week. What's that going to mean? The UN's Deputy Humanitarian Chief Catherine Bragg had this to say.
While we're looking into contingency planning to fill the gaps left by these expulsions, it will be extremely challenging for the remaining humanitarian organizations and the government of Sudan to fill the operating gap. And we do not see how these gaps can be fully covered.
Well, the International Criminal Court issued this arrest warrant, and there have been ripples in the humanitarian sector as well as the political sector. Joining us now is Nick Grano, a deputy president for operations at the International Crisis Group. He's in Brussels. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And David Clatworthy is coordinator of water and sanitation in Darfur on the ground. He's for one of the expelled aid agencies, the International Rescue Committee. He is in Nairobi. David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, John.
All right, great. Let's begin with you, Nick. What is the political reaction? This is the first arrest warrant for a sitting president. It seems as though in the early going, President Bashir has used this for political advantage. What is the political reaction within Sudan and around the continent?
Well, the political reaction in Sudan has been mixed. You played a clip with President Bashir kind of with crowds there, but in the camps, many of the people who have been the victims of the conflict have welcomed the decision of the International Criminal Court because they see that there's a possibility that President Bashir will be held accountable for the crimes that have been committed against them. And the international community has been fairly cautious in its response, I think waiting to see how some of this plays out.
Now, the African Union has suggested that Thabo Mbeki be appointed to investigate international war crimes or genocidal accusations independently of the International Criminal Court. Is this seen as an attempt to route around the International Criminal Court, or would this be in parallel? Would this amplify what the International Criminal Court has done here?
It's not clear yet. The announcement's just come out. I mean, if the intention is for him to somehow interfere with the International Criminal Court process, then that would be inappropriate. The International Criminal Court's an international court. South Africa and 30 African countries have signed up to the court, along with 70 or more countries around the world. And, it's an independent institution that has a role to investigate claims of atrocities in Sudan and should be allowed to continue with its work.
And it's not as though Mbeki has much of a track record after failing to effectively mediate the situation in Zimbabwe. David Clatworthy, tell us what the impact on the ground in humanitarian terms is of these expulsions.
John, the impact on the ground is really very large indeed. We've had, as you know, 13 agencies have had their licenses revoked, and those include really most of the large NGOs working in Darfur and working in North Sudan. Certainly our programs cover 650,000 people in Darfur and an even larger number in North and East Sudan. And it's going to have a very big impact on those people. And other organizations also will be facing a similar situation.
This is Farai, by the way. I just wanted to follow up on that. I spoke with an aid worker from another NGO relief group, someone who was really working on the ground in a medical capacity. And this person was very loath to publicly address any of the politics. And is there a sense that folks from perhaps your organization or any other operating there just have to be very circumspect and very careful about what you say, or else you might not be able to get back into the country? I'm just being frank here.
Well, we are, as a humanitarian organization, we really do need to focus on unmet needs of the people who are affected by disaster or conflict and so on. So we operate within a political space, obviously, but we're neutral. We focus on the needs of the people there. So I think that the lack of comment is really probably related to that.
All right. Well, then, Nick, let's address this to you. I mean, is the net effect of this to further isolate Darfur and the people of Darfur? And has the International Criminal Court played into President Bashir's hands?
Well, I think we have to, face the situation that Bashir is responsible for, President Bashir is responsible for what is happening. He's essentially trying to hold more than a million civilians, his most vulnerable citizens, hostage in his confrontation with the international community. And I think what you should see, or I hope we'll see, is that the allies of Sudan, such as Arab League and African Union states and China, are working frantically behind the scenes to encourage him to step back from the brink. President Bashir could change this order tomorrow. And I hope that there is pressure being brought to bear on him, because otherwise those states that are in a position to change the situation will be, not complicit but party to what is going on.
Nick, I'm going to follow up with you. I got a chance to speak to the president of Senegal, and he essentially said, you know what, there's a lot of tribal factionalism in Sudan. Don't blame President Bashir. What do you think of that?
Well, I think you have an independent institution here, the International Criminal Court, that was given this referral by the UN Security Council and has conducted a very thorough investigation over the last 2 or 3 years. And as a result of that, has come out and found that there is a case to answer for President Bashir on crimes against humanity and war crimes. It didn't find him responsible at this stage for the possibility of genocide. And the international community has been a supporter of the International Criminal Court, and I think it's the right time for the international community to say we support this international and independent institution, and we should let it go about its work.
Although, Nick, the Security Council has been stopped by China's refusal to do anything other than either veto or abstain from resolutions, and Russia has even criticized this International Criminal Court decision to issue an arrest warrant. I guess what's frustrating to me is what we saw last year in Myanmar, Burma, another one of these hostage situations where a government, for its own reasons, maintains large segments of its population in extreme humanitarian stress, and the international community can do almost nothing about it. It seems like this is becoming more of a pattern than simply an example of Bashir acting alone.
Yeah, but I think that also illustrates, I mean, it's a very good example, but it also illustrates the importance of international justice. You know, unless those perpetrating these atrocities are held accountable, then there will be continued impunity. And I also think that states that have a strong relationship with perpetrators, so in this case China and its relationship, it gets very large oil supplies from Sudan, need to think about the reputational costs that are incurred if they stand by while President Bashir essentially denies humanitarian assistance to over a million civilians. There will be a cost for China and others that are in a position to influence the Sudanese government if they don't take a strong stance on this.
David, Farai, I think, very responsibly raises the issue that you cannot be completely candid, but is there a buzz among the NGOs there in the rumor mill of Nairobi that Farai and I know very, very well, of what the possible scenario might be of your organizations getting back in? Is there a quid pro quo even being talked about behind the scenes?
John, we'll be trying to appeal the decision with the government of Sudan, and I know that organizations are appealing to the government, not just the NGOs, but UN and so on. We'll just have to see what happens. We very much hope that it will be revoked.
And what about the question of genocide, Nick? That word has been used by some, decried by others. What do you think?
Well, genocide is a very difficult charge to prove because you not only have to prove that there's been mass slaughter, murders, atrocities, but there was a specific intent by President Bashir in this case to wipe out ethnic groups because of their ethnicity or religious groups, etc. The court came out and said essentially there's not enough evidence before us, and if you get more evidence then you can come back to us and present another charge of genocide. So I think at this stage we have to bear in mind that the court has said there's a case to answer on these very, very serious crimes of crimes against humanity and war crimes, and focus on that. If more information comes available, then I suspect that there will be another attempt to charge President Bashir
Indeed.
With genocide.
Well, you've described the process of slow wheels of international justice on a situation where the humanitarian urgency is maybe accelerating. Nick Grano, Deputy President for Operations at the International Crisis Group, and David Clatworthy, Coordinator of Water and Sanitation in Darfur for the International Rescue Committee. Thanks to both of you, speaking from Brussels and Nairobi. Thank you. We'll be right back.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.